Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka with some reading from Sri Aurobindo today from Essays on the Gita. Chapter is called Equality, and it's 11 pages long, so I'm going to read the first half today and the second half next episode. So he says, equality, since knowledge, desirelessness, impersonality, equality, the inner self-existence, peace and bliss, freedom from, or at least superiority to, the tangled interlocking of the three modes of nature, are the signs of the liberated soul. They must accompany it in all its activities. They are the condition of that unalterable calm which this soul preserves in all the movement, all the shock, all the clash of forces which surround it in the world. That calm reflects the equable immutability of the Brahman in the midst of all mutations. And it belongs to the indivisible and impartial oneness which is forever immanent in all the multiplicities of the universe. For an equal and all-equalizing spirit is that oneness in the midst of the million differences and inequalities of the world. And equality of the spirit is the sole real equality. For in all else in existence, there can only be similarity, adjustment, and balance. But even in the greatest similarities of the world, we find difference of inequality and difference of unlikeness, and the adjusted balancings of the world can only come about by a poising of combined unequal weights. Hence, the immense importance attached by the Gita in its elements of Karma Yoga to equality. It is the notice of the free spirit's real relationships with the girl. Oops. The spirit's free relations with the world. Self-knowledge, desirelessness, impersonality, bliss, freedom from the modes of nature, when withdrawn into themselves, self-absorbed, inactive, have no need of equality. For they take no cognizance of the things in which the opposition of equality and inequality arises. But the moment the spirit takes cognizance of and deals with the multiplicities, personalities, differences, inequalities of the nature of the action of nature, it has to effectuate these other signs of its free status by this one manifesting sign of equality. Knowledge is the consciousness of unity with the One, and in relation with the many different beings and existences of the universe, it must show itself by an equal oneness with all. Impersonality is the one immutable spirit's superiority to the variations of its multiple personality in the world. In its dealings with the personalities of the universe, it must show itself in the equal and impartial spirit of its action and with regard to all. However various that action may be made by the variety of relations into which it is molded, or of the conditions under which it has to take place. So Krishna in the Gita says that none is dear to him, none hated. To all, he is equal in spirit. Yet is the God-lover the special receiver of his grace because the relation he has created is different. And the one impartial Lord of all, yet meets each soul according to its way of approach to him. Desirelessness is the illimitable spirit's superiority to the limiting attraction of the separate objects of desire in the world. When it has to enter into relations with those objects, it must show it either by an equal and impartial indifference in their possession, or by an equal and impartial unattached delight in all, and love for all, which, because it is self-existent, does not depend upon possession or non-possession, but is in its essence unperturbed and immutable. For the spirit's bliss is in itself, and if this bliss is to enter into relations with things and creatures, it is only in this way that it can manifest its free spirituality. Transcendence of the gunas is the unperturbed spirit's superiority to that flux of action of the modes of nature, which is, in its constant character, perturbed and unequal. If it has to enter into relations with the conflicting and unequal activities of nature, if the free soul is to allow its nature any action at all, it must show its superiority by an impartial equality towards all activities, results, and happenings. Equality is the sign, and also for the aspirant, the test. Where there is inequality in the soul, there is in evidence some unequal play of the modes of nature, motion of desire, play of personal will, feeling and action, activity of joy and grief, or that disturbed and disturbing delight which is not true spiritual bliss, but a mental satisfaction bringing in its train inevitably a counterpart or recoil of mental dissatisfaction. Where there is inequality of soul, there is deviation from knowledge, loss of steadfast abiding in the all-embracing and all-reconciling oneness of the Brahman and unity of things. By his equality, the Karma Yoga knows in the midst of his action that he is free. It is the spiritual nature of the equality enjoined, high and universal in its character and comprehension, which gives its distinctive note to the teaching of the Gita in this matter. For otherwise, the mere teaching of equality in itself as the most desirable status of the mind, feelings, and temperament in which we rise superior to human weakness is by no means peculiar to the Gita. Equality has always been held up to admiration as the philosophic ideal and the characteristic temperament of the sages. The Gita takes up indeed this philosophic ideal, but carries it far beyond into a higher region where we find ourselves breathing a larger and purer air. The stoic poise, the philosophic poise of the soul, are only its first and second steps of ascension out of the whirl of the passions and the tossings of desire to a serenity and bliss, not of the gods, but of the divine himself in his supreme self-mastery. The stoic equality, making character its pivot, founds itself upon self-mastery by austere endurance. The happier and serener philosophic equality prefers self-mastery by knowledge, by detachment, by a high intellectual indifference seated above the disturbances to which our nature is prone. There is also the religious or Christian equality, which is a perpetual kneeling or a prostrate resignation and submission to the will of God. These are the three steps and means towards divine peace: heroic endurance, sage indifference, pious resignation. But the Gita takes them all in its large synthetic manner and weaves them into an upward soul movement. But it gives to each a profounder root, a larger outlook, a more universal and transcendent significance. For to each it gives the values of the spirit, its power of spiritual being beyond the strain of character, beyond the difficult poise of the understanding, beyond the stress of the emotions. The ordinary human soul takes a pleasure in the customary disturbances of its nature life. It is because it has this pleasure, and because, having it, it gives a sanction to the troubled play of the lower nature, that the play continues perpetually. For the Prakriti does nothing except for the pleasure and with the sanction of its lover and enjoyer, the Purusha. We do not recognize this truth because, under the actual stroke of the adverse disturbance, smitten by grief, pain, discomfort, misfortune, failure, defeat, blame, dishonor, the mind shrinks back from the blow, while it leaps eagerly to the embrace of the opposite and pleasurable disturbances, joy, pleasure, satisfaction of all kinds, prosperity, success, victory, glory, praise. But this does not alter the truth of the soul's pleasure in life, which remains constant behind the dualities of the mind. The warrior does not feel physical pleasure in his wounds or find mental satisfaction in his defeats, but he has a complete delight in the Godhead of battle, which brings to him defeat and wounds as well as the joy of victory. And he accepts the chances of the former and the hope of the latter as part of the mingled weft of war, the thing which the delight in him pursues. Even wounds bring him a joy and pride in memory, complete when the pain of them has passed, but often enough present even while it is there, actually fed by the pain. Defeat keeps for him the joy and pride of indomitable resistance to a superior adversary, or, if he is of a baser kind, the passions of hatred and revenge, which also have their darker and crueler pleasures. So it is with the pleasure of the soul in the normal play of our life. Now the mind recoils by pain and dislike from the adverse strokes of life. That is nature's device for enforcing a principle of self-protection, so that the vulnerable nervous and bodily parts of us may not unduly rush upon self-destruction to embrace it. It takes joy in the favorable touches of life. That is nature's lure of rajasic pleasure, so that the force in the creature may overcome the tamasic tendencies of inertia and inactivity and be impelled fully towards action, desire, struggle, success, and by its attachment to these things, her ends may be worked out. Our secret soul takes a pleasure in this strife and effort, and even a pleasure in adversity and suffering, which can be complete enough in memory and retrospect, but is present too behind at the time and often even rises to the surface of the afflicted mind to support it in its passion. But what really attracts the soul is the whole mingled weft of the thing we call life, with all its disturbance of struggle and seeking, its attractions and repulsions, its offer and its menace, its varieties of every kind. To the rajasic desire soul in us, a monotonous pleasure, success without struggle, joy without a shadow must, after a time, become fatiguing, insipid, cloying. It needs a background of darkness to give full value to its enjoyment of light. For the happiness it seeks and enjoys is of that very nature. It is, in its very essence, relative and dependent on the perception and experience of its opposite. The joy of the soul in the dualities is the secret of the mind's pleasure in living. Ask it to rise out of all this disturbance to the unmingled joy of the pure bliss soul, which all the time secretly supports its strength in the struggle and makes its own continued existence possible. Why, it will draw back at once from the call. It does not believe in such an existence. Or it believes that it would not be life, that it would not be at all the varied existence in the world around it in which it is accustomed to take pleasure. Why, it would be something tasteless and without savor. Or it feels that the effort would be too difficult for it. It recoils from the struggle of the ascent. Although in reality, the spiritual change is not at all more difficult than the realization of the dreams the desire soul pursues, nor entails more struggle and labor in the attainment than the tremendous effort which the desire soul expends in its passionate chase after its own transient objects of pleasure and desire. The true cause of its unwillingness is that it is asked to rise above its own atmosphere. It is asked to breathe a rarer and purer air of life, whose bliss and power it cannot realize and hardly even conceives as real. While the joy of this lower, turbid nature is to it the one thing familiar and palpable. Nor is this lower satisfaction in itself a thing evil and unprofitable. It is rather the condition for the upward evolution of our human nature out of the tamasic ignorance and inertia to which its material being is most subject. It is the rajasic stage of the graded ascent of man towards the supreme self-knowledge, power, and bliss. But if we rest eternally on this plane, our ascent remains unfinished, the evolution of the soul incomplete. Through the sattvic being and nature to that which is beyond the three gunas, to that which is beyond the three gunas lies the way of the soul to its perfection. Pausing here to be completed next Wednesday in the next episode. Thank you for listening. May there be light in your life this day and always.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.